This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivis. So the National Association of Gifted Children is actually organizing a conference called the Gifted Asia 2014 conference. It's happening in here in Malaysia in Monash University Sunway campus. And we have in the studio with us one of the speakers who was a gifted child and has moved on to be a gifted adult. And of course, she's no stranger. She's done shows with us on the environment. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ile Gerber-Suba. She's from the Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics from the National University of Malaysia or University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Professor. How are you?
Thank you very much.
It's been a long time since we've had you on. I mean, we've spoken to you about a whole load of nanomimetics and biomimetics and nano, technology and things like you do such fantastic work, if you listen to the podcast, you'll understand what I mean. But Professor, you're a physicist specializing in nanophysics and biomimetics. What do you study, actually, for those of them who've missed those environmental shows? What is this study all about?
Well, the amazing thing about biomimetics is that it's a highly interdisciplinary field. So I am by training a physicist, and what I do is, together with my team, we are learning from living nature for new applications in science, technology, engineering, in the arts.
Okay. Let's give me an example. Use some of the examples that you've, done shows with us. I know you studied natural dye in animals, butterflies, for an example. The colors and how they come up with their color is something you talk about, and how we can use those colors in as natural dyes for us as well. You just want to shed more light on how biomimetics and nanophysics comes into that?
Yes. So if we look at butterflies, for example, the national Malaysian butterfly, Roger Brooks birdwing, it is amazingly beautiful. It's black and it's green. And actually, if you go to the KL Butterfly Park and take one of these wings and put it, of a dead butterfly who is lying on the ground, and put it in a grinder, you would get a transparent pile of dust. Transparent dust. The black would disappear, the green would disappear. And the reason for this is the black color and the green color are no pigment colors, are no chemical colors. They're physical colors, like frozen rainbows, little structures, nanostructures, who are playing with the light and who are generating the colors via physical phenomena. And so what we can learn from these butterflies is how to make colors for dyeing our clothes, for dyeing things which we normally add an additive layer of paint to bring color to them without adding some toxic chemistry.
Very interesting indeed. There's a podcast available on that if you want. Just log on to bfm.my. What motivated your interest in all of this, Professor, of all things? I mean, it's so specialized, highly, highly specialized. But what motivates you?
You know, ever since I was a small child, I was in love with nature, with living nature, and also with non-living nature, with stones, with plants, with animals, with the stars in the sky. And I remember one of my biggest findings, perhaps actually the biggest finding I ever had in my whole life, was when as a 5-year-old child, I found out all by myself what plant seeds are good for. That from a plant seed, you can grow a new plant. And I was so excited because I was playing, with the flowers, with the seed pods. I was opening them. I was looking at the seeds. I saw how they are changing their color from green to black, and that the seeds then fall out and the little plants are starting to grow. And I realized that there is so much in our environment which is interesting and which is fascinating and from which we can actually learn for engineering. And there was also a very important moment a couple of years later when I first heard about glass-making algae. I was completely stunned. I was completely amazed. How can it be that algae, the green things mm-hmm. which are everywhere in rivers, in the sea, on stones, how can it be that they are producing glass, hydrated silica? And I started to dig into this field, and I found out that actually there are 70 different minerals which are produced by organisms, ceramics, silica, you name it. And I thought, wow, that's amazing, because when we people are producing our things, we are polluting a lot, we are destroying a lot. Whereas if such a glass-making algae is making its house of glass, there is not very much pollution going on. Mm-hmm. And it produces not just the material, but the material itself is beautifully structured and has this amazing combination of structure, material, functionality, and beauty.
Amazing.
Amazing, yes. And so I thought...
See, it's only through somebody like you talking about it makes it so interesting. I mean, I wouldn't ordinarily be able to, you know, make these sort of observations or bother to read up on research behind all of this, Professor. I mean, you have been recognized as a gifted child. Does that mean you were gifted with an extraordinarily high IQ, or how would you describe it?
Well, I just overheard it, you know, when I, for example, did the entrance exam for the secondary school when
back
I was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
this is in
Austria. Mm-hmm. I heard that the teacher told to my mom that I was the best of the country, and several years later, when I was about 15, I got an offer to go to a gifted school in Italy where they would select only 2 or 3 people from every country in Europe to go there. And so, yes, now and then on little occasions, I realized it from the outside. What I myself always realized was that I'm very, very curious, and I love to ask questions. And I was so happy when, for the first time, when I was studying physics, one of the professors said, "Do not take anything for granted. Ask for the reason behind everything." And I was so happy that there are other people thinking like this.
What does gifted mean to you?
Gifted means to me that you are ready to dig down to the very, very basis of things. You are not ready to accept explanations by anybody. You have to experience by yourself. You have to learn by yourself. You have to find out by yourself. You have to go there by experiments or by thinking, but to go deep down into the basics.
You know, I was stalking you on Facebook, and this is what she said. It's probably going to come through in this interview on being a gifted adult. You described it as stars in the sky, the themes. Stars in the sky, mosquito larvae. We haven't gone there yet. tragically failed rainworm parasite. And long journeys with your cat to the neighborhood. You want to go through that journey with me? We'll come back and find out more up next about Professor Dr. Ile Gerbasuba from the Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics from University Kebangsaan in Malaysia. She's a gifted adult, actually, was recognized at a young age, and we'll come back and find out more. If you have a question for her, send it through text 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, Dr. Ile Gerbasuba from the Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics from University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. Dr. Ile actually has moved from Vienna to Malaysia. How long have you been in Malaysia now?
It's now 6 years.
That's a long time. And
oh, yes.
Contributing very much to, you know, research and what's going on in University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. We spoke about the themes that would probably drive this interview. I'm very curious. We're going to start with your life. And you mentioned something about the stars in the sky. How did that influence your life?
I think this was the reason why I started to study physics, because I was standing with a friend in the night outside and we looked up to the stars.
How old were you?
I was about 9 mm-hmm. or 10, something like this. And his friend told me, Christine, because that time I was called Christine, not Ille. So this friend told me, Christine, you know, actually, when you look up to the sky and you see the stars, you look into different pasts, because the stars are from a different distance from us. And if the light travels at constant velocity, it takes different time to reach your eyes. And so when you're looking into the sky, you're looking into different pasts. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. There's so much I could learn, so much I can find out, so much that I want to know. And yeah, I think this was the thing that got me into physics. The mosquito larva, well, you know.
You have mosquitoes in Austria.
Yes, we have mosquitoes, but we do not have dengue.
Dengue, yes.
We do not have these horrible diseases associated with mosquitoes here in Malaysia. So, you know, when they come, they take a little drop of blood and they use it to raise their babies. So no big deal, mm-hmm. actually.
Okay.
But people, of course, do not like them very much. So we were collecting rainwater for watering the plants in the garden. My father is very, very, you know, he loves his garden. And my mother also, they are gardeners by heart. So we were collecting rainwater, and the collector of the rainwater had a lot of rust around. And I saw that there are these little animals and that they undergo some change from one type of morphology to another one. And I called them rusty animals, rust animals, because I thought they are living off the rust.
Right.
And I kept them and I fed them with rust. And they were happy and they were lovely. And they were so, you know, their little eyes and their little mouth and how they were sucking in the air and how they were hanging on the water surface. And they were just gorgeous. And then somebody told me, you know, that this is actually mosquito larva. And I had a look again at my little animals, and I saw, yes, there were some empty ones of these animals. And actually, the mosquito are coming out. There's not just one or two different forms of them. There's the egg form. There's the first, the second, and the third would be the flying mosquito. So I remember that I took my little container with all of them, and I threw it onto the floor, and I saw them dying. And I thought, it's a good thing I do, because there won't be any mosquitoes which will be stinging people. But I was sitting there crying and crying because my beloved pets were dying. And so, you know, I was thinking, well, things are not so easy. I mean, there is not just good and bad. There is not just things you have to hate and things you have to love, but there are shades in between. So for me, this was a very, very important story. And even more important was the rainworm paradise.
Yes.
So I had decided that I know everything and I will build the perfect habitat for rainworms.
Okay.
Where they will be, you know, live happily ever after. So I took a plastic sheet and I put on some soil and I put in some rainworms and I was, you know, putting some water on it. And then over the weekend we went away and we came home and everything was dried and all the rainworms were dead. It was a tragically failed rainworm paradise. And this experience led me to find out that actually the ecosystems that we encounter are very complex, are very interconnected, are very interdependent. And even if you come into the game with the best of all intentions, if you do not understand the cycles that are going on and the relationships, by influencing the system, even if you want the best for it, you can, you know, have very, very dangerous, bad, lethal results. So this made me think more deeply into complex systems, into complex relationships, and into properties like emergence.
You know, as a gifted child, did you ever feel you were different from the rest?
Yes, mm-hmm. most of the time.
How did you cope with that?
Most of the time. How did I cope with that? Well, it was very hard. I have to say it was very hard because I love to read, to think, And I never was very much into music or dancing or going out or doing all these things, so into socializing. So for me, I had to do it very actively to bring myself into society and to contribute to society. Because for me, for a very long time, it was the highest joy just to sit somewhere and to learn for myself. But then I found out, well, it's good for nobody. Mm-hmm. If
so you
I'm
had
just
to,
all alone and isolated.
Sure. So you had to force the social interaction.
Yes.
Was that easy?
No.
How did you do that? Not I mean, you're on radio now. Talking,
not
you know,
all,
and then very comfortable
yes,
about
yes,
it.
Yes.
How did you learn how to socially interact?
Yeah, I think there was a very hard time. So I remember, you know, I loved horseback riding, for example. I still love it. But every time I was riding with other people, I was wishing nobody would talk because it's much more fun to experience the horse and not to experience other people talking. But then we had one episode where one of our horses died, and we were then sitting all together around the fire and discussing this. And I realized that indeed you can get warmth and understanding and help from other people. And so I think that was a very important lesson, that I saw that I'm not a lone fighter, an isolated being who provides things, but also that there is a give and take.
One more aspect we left out on, the last aspect of the theme, which is you failed with the rainworm paradise. Long journeys with your cat.
Yes.
I understand your cat made the biggest impact.
Yes,
on
yes.
you.
So my first cat when I was a child, I think I had him from when I was 5 until I was about 11. With him, I went on long, long walks. And I once told this story to an American friend of mine. And he said, you put him in a basket and you carried him around.
I was just going to ask you.
And I said, no, you couldn't be farther from what I did. I did not carry him around. He showed me his world. I went with him to all his cat places. And, you know, this simple question by this friend also showed me that I have to explain what I mean when I say something, because it can be misunderstood
yes.
so easily. So our long journeys were like this, that he allowed me into his cat world. So he was walking and I was just following him everywhere. You know, that time we could enter the houses of the neighbors, we could show up in the kitchen, we could enter the gardens. It was
open the refrigerator and help ourselves.
Yes, exactly. So everything was open to us kids, and
yes.
people were at home, and it was a gorgeous time. And, you know, he showed me his places. We went hunting for mice. I was sitting with him for hours in front of this mouse hole waiting, and he showed me his pace of life, and I think he taught me his language.
And you learned a whole lot from there.
Yes.
Have you ever felt suppressed by your environment?
I continuously feel suppressed by my environment.
How so?
Because I would like to fly off in all possible directions, physically and mentally. And
but what's stopping you?
That I have a mass, that I only have one brain, that I have limited capabilities, that,
Growing from a gifted child to a gifted adult, did that have to change? Did you have to make big changes as you move towards adulthood as a gifted child?
I think one has to make adaptations, but I think one should be very careful not to make too drastical changes. And I think freedom is one of the most important aspects.
The pressure is always there to conform,
yes.
to conform,
yes.
right? So you need to find that balance, really?
I'm not so sure
no.
about that.
So you didn't want to conform at all?
No.
Good for you. You know, pressure would have been there to conform.
Yeah, yeah.
And how has being gifted helped you with your career?
I think, you know, I think it helped me to reach everything which I reached. So I studied physics engineering, but we have a dropout quota of 78%.
Wow.
So of 100 people who started, only 22 finish. I was one of the few girls who studied physics. I'm one of the few people who got a permanent contract at the university. In times where you just have time-limited contracts. And I think one of the biggest privileges is that people are ready to give me freedom. I cannot value this enough. It's gorgeous. But still, for me, it feels like it's much too small, much too little. But when I compare the presence that I get to many of my friends, I really feel that I have to be thankful. But nevertheless, like I said, I want to fly here, there in my mind mm-hmm. all the time.
I'm sure you do. Nothing stops you in the mind, isn't it? Where do you stop is really the question,
yeah.
you know. Sometimes getting focused and pursuing something can be a challenge for you.
Yes, but I don't do this and I don't want to do this.
Sure. De Niro, who's listening right now, thinks... says, what a charming person. Thank you for texting in, De Niro. What brought you to Malaysia? We are concerned about the brain drain. I mean, we're losing brains to other countries, but you've decided to come here.
Malaysia is a gorgeous country. Malaysia is wonderful. You know, I'm working on the global challenges for humankind and how we can address them with a new, potentially disruptive way of doing engineering and doing the things that we do generally. And many of the problems that we are facing were generated by the Western way of doing things. And so we decided, especially because Albert Einstein said you can only address a problem with a different way of thinking than was used when generating the problem, to go to a country that is the absolute opposite to the country where we are from, with my husband and myself. And so we decided to go to a tropical country, decided to go to a Muslim country, to a country where you have many different people from different ethnicities, where you have forests, where you have a fast-growing economy, where you have everything. And, you know, we decided, initially we decided to just come here for a couple of years. Definitely not for six.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and now we see how long we are going to stay here.
Stay is really my recommendation because we could do with, you know, your approach. It's very different to the ordinary person's views when it comes to functioning on a day-to-day basis. Has your experience as a gifted child helped you shape your teaching career? And you're with University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Are you very much research-based? How do you interact with students? How has that, you know, gift that you have helped you with the children? Or how have the children benefited from your giftedness?
I think especially in interdisciplinary approaches, you need to have some really smart ideas if you bring together people from different fields. So, like my two Malay PhD students, Mrs. Siti Saliha and Mrs. Salma, one comes from biology, one comes from engineering, and you need to have some sparkling ideas how to marry these two ways of thinking and how to marry, you know, these two. They have completely different sets of motivations, of visions, and of missions. And nevertheless, over 3 years, we brought them together and we generated all together, all three, something which is such a nice synergistic outcome that the engineer is now collaborating with the biologist and developing together new approaches inspired by living nature for engineering.
We're always guilty of not thinking out of the box. You were born with that ability. Not all of us have been. How do you help children nurture that inquisitiveness? How do you do that?
So what we love to do with kids, and actually not just with kids, with grown-ups, with CEOs, with Maori elders, with mechanics professors from India, with electrical engineers from India, with everybody, is I love to take them with me to remote areas. Best would be where we have no telephone, where we have no internet, where we just have a lot of people from many different fields, and we go together to the forest. And we look at the forest, but not with a biologist's eye and not with a photographer's eye, but with an eye on the problems that we are currently facing in our professions. So the architect wants to do something, the physicist wants to do something, the biologist wants to do something, and then we ask living nature our questions, and we're getting some answers. And then when we're sitting together in the evening or in the night talking, the people find out that it is possible to talk across fields, to talk across levels of education, and it is possible, if you're ready to do it, to access this treasure pot which everybody is carrying around with himself or herself, you know, all the experiences, all the things that we know. I was at the MyWin Academy just a couple of days ago, and Women in Innovation Network of Malaysia. And there we were talking about this treasure box that everybody is carrying around and how to access it. And I think that's something, if people realize this and if they are curious enough to ask the other person these questions, they will find out that there's a lot they're getting back, and there is a lot, even if this person works in a completely different field, which can be applied in the own field and which would expand the horizon. So I think it's curiosity, which is important. But another thing which is also very important in my view is to feel responsible, not just for oneself or for the family, or for the country, or for humanity, but generally for all life on Earth. And I think if you have this combination of being curious and feeling responsible, and if you're smart enough and do not make mistakes like I did with my tragically failed rainworm experiment.
You were very young. You're excused.
Yes, you might contribute something really important and really substantial. And I think this is what we need at the moment. And this is what I want to, you know, breed with my students, people who can really contribute to make this world a better place.
You will be speaking at the upcoming Gifted Asia 2014 conference, which has been organized by the National Association of Gifted Children of Malaysia at Monash University Sunway Campus. How do you find the level of support for gifted children in Malaysia? Do you work very much with the association?
I went with them to Tsonegara, and I went with them to Frim with homeschooled gifted kids and their mothers, mainly their mothers. And I have to say it was an amazing ability on both, amazing experience on both occasions, because of the questions they ask, because of the curiosity, because of the sparkles you see in their minds. And it's beautiful. But I can also imagine that it must be a big, big challenge to have such a little box of sparkles at home. So I'm very happy that in Malaysia we have this association which provides, you know, help for parents with gifted kids, and that also things like this conference is organized, where you can read to people, where you can listen to people who work in the area and who think about the area.
When you were growing up and you had all these questions, Professor, you wouldn't have found answers to all of them. Was that frustrating for you, or where did you go for these answers?
It was not frustrating for me, not at all. Not at all. I think today, when many people think that most of the answers can be Googled, perhaps it's a little bit too easy, because this thirst for knowledge might be easily filled with conventional, boring book knowledge. I think book knowledge is very important, but it should not be 98% of the content of your brain. And I think, you know, when I see the gifted kids today, they are like, their mind is connected to Google. Whereas when I bring them to the forest, I want them to start asking questions and to see connections and trends and developments which you cannot Google, which you do not find in the internet.
You know, it's amazing. You're going to be presenting a talk at this conference. What's it going to be about?
Yeah, so my husband and myself, we're going to talk.
Is he a gifted adult too?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Wow.
So this will be...
How did you meet?
Exciting.
Am I allowed to ask you that?
Sure, you're allowed to ask. We met on an internet platform.
Okay.
So I was looking for a husband. And I went to the first district, to the inner district, the most exquisite district in Vienna, to one of these marriage offices. And I told them I would like to find somebody to love and to share my life with. And the woman there said, "Sorry, I cannot sign you up. You would destroy our statistics. We cannot take a doctor of physics, a female doctor of physics, because we wouldn't find you anybody. And we have a 100% success rate. So really sorry. If you were somebody else, would be a pleasure, but cannot." So I decided to sign up on an internet platform, which is called love.at, AT for Austria. And I signed up with a friend of mine, and she received 186 replies the next day, and I received 3. Mm-hmm. Two of them were from physicist friends who had shown me their emails to prospective future girlfriends before, so I wrote them back, "Sorry, this is me," because this is all anonymous, and there will be no love affair between us two. But the third one was very, very interesting. Yeah, and 10 years later, we married.
Wow. So both of you are going to be presenting at this conference.
Yes, okay. Yes.
What are you going to be speaking about?
We are going to talk about our life journey, and what we learned for ourselves and how we are going to transport it either to students or to employees or to co-workers.
Has it been a journey for the both of you, being married as both gifted adults?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah?
It's gorgeous.
Challenges?
Challenges. Well, I wouldn't say so many challenges. It's like a firework. And the best thing is that we are not just lovers, we are friends. And I think this is a perfect combination.
Wonderful. Your message to Malaysians, coming from the gifted adult that you are, what would you like to leave us with?
Stay curious, ask questions, and please, please feel responsible and everything.
If you'd like to be a part of this Gifted Asia 2014 conference, you can just log on to admin@NAGC, which stands for the National Association of Gifted Children. That's NAGC.my. Or you can just log on to facebook.com/mynagc and you'll be able to get more information. We wish you all the best, Professor. Thank you very much for sharing your journey with us. We've covered all, right? The cat, the rainworm with the mosquito larvae and the stars.
Yes.
All done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Professor Dr. Ile Gubeshuba, Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics from University Kebangsaan, Malaysia, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.